Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're coming at you like a Scirocco blazing out of the Mojave Desert, a hot blast of cool information that isn't found anywhere else on your radio dial. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest city on Earth, the epicenter of excess, the planetary capital of fun, sun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host. So glad to be with you once again. A lot has happened in the world of UFOs, paranormal, conspiracies, and science since my last appearance on the program. And we're going to do our best to catch up on quite a bit of it. So put on a pot and strap yourselves in. Next hour, we'll be joined by one of this program's most popular guests. His name is Jim Mars. He's written several best-selling books, as you probably know, about assorted mysteries and conspiracies. He's a guy who doesn't pull punches. He and I had a nice chat this afternoon by phone. I know he's got a lot of stuff on his mind that he hasn't discussed in his previous appearances here, so that should be a scorcher. And then coming up in this hour, we go back to Texas and back to the story of the Texas UFO sightings. A lot's happened in the past few weeks. The sightings continue. The phony baloney explanations from the military have been poked full of holes. And now some of those who helped to get this story out are paying for it. I'll be joined in this hour by Alejandro Rojas of MUFON, who's been my guest before. He's going to sort of fill in the big picture about what's going on in Texas. And also by Angela Joyner. Now, if you followed this story at all, you recognize that name. She's the newspaper reporter in Stephenville, Texas, whose initial stories about the UFO flap made worldwide news that sort of set off this stampede. And since those stories were written, she's been fired. Was it because someone wanted her muzzled, or is there a more mundane explanation? And what does she think of how the story has played out? You know, a lot of people have tried to get this broadcast interview. The Coast to Coast producers are the ones who nailed it down, and that should be enlightening and fun. As you might know, this is Lunar Eclipse Week in North America, Europe, and parts of Africa. According to a release that was sent out by NASA Goddard, a total eclipse of the moon will occur in the late hours of February 20th, that's Wednesday, and will, quote, dazzle the night sky. You won't see another total lunar eclipse, I think, until 2010, somewhere in that area. So Wednesday night, get outdoors, take a look. Hope it's not cloudy in your neck of the woods. The entire event should last a couple of hours, 3 hours or more. There's a website called space.com that has an entire viewer's guide if you're interested, a lot of background info, and a lot more about space in general. Space.com says the folks up there in Oregon and Northern California, I know we have a lot of coast-to-coast listeners up there, might have some problems because of cloud cover, but the rest of us are in pretty good shape. Of course, whenever you have something like this where millions of people are outdoors at night with their eyes to the skies, chances are good that a couple of them, and maybe a lot of them, will see something other than the moon. I mean, it happens. I hope some of you see something cool and you'll let us know about it. Maybe we can talk about it next Sunday night. There certainly is something in the air these days. It's just, I don't know, it's just sort of a feeling. And I'll talk more about it in a couple of minutes. But it feels like we're building towards something based on a flurry of recent events, seemingly unconnected. More of that in a moment. First, though, some other stories from the world of science. This one's an attention grabber. Scientists at Johns Hopkins University say that Titan, one of the moons of Saturn, has more oil and gas than all the known reserves on Earth, hundreds of times as much as we've got. So much oil that it basically rains oil on Titan. And the hydrocarbons have collected on the surface of that moon in these vast lakes, almost oceans. A place that rains oil. And man, if there's ever something that would give the space program a kick in the pants, it would be this, oceans of oil on Titan. Don't be surprised if, like any day now, to hear that we've, by golly, we better get on up there. Maybe have Exxon build a fleet of tanker spacecraft and then send some troops up to protect Titanian democracy. Listen, whatever it takes. No one's had much interest in our space program for a long time, no one in government anyway. I mean, after 2010, the U.S. won't even have a way to get up into space, even to the space station, unless we hitch a ride with someone else, because the shuttle's being retired in 2010. So if a moon full of oil is what it takes, what it's needed to give space exploration a jolt, I'm all for it. I read another story about Titan, which called the place Earth Number Two. That was a quote, Earth Number Two, that its atmosphere is drenched in these complex organic molecules the kind needed for life to arise, the same kind of combinations that may have given rise to life on Earth billions of years ago. Titan's considered too cold for any kind of life right now, but the speculation is that in billions of years from now, when our sun grows a lot hotter, a Titan could be like a regular garden spot in our solar system, much more hospitable than Earth would be around that time. We'd better get there and stake out some real estate, I'd say, if that's going to be true, like beachfront property on the hydrocarbon sea. You know, pitch an umbrella and smear on some sunscreen, and open a cold one, and listen to those waves of oil as they lap up on the sand. Sounds downright romantic. Also in astronomy news, scientists using the Hubble telescope have spotted what they think is the farthest galaxy ever seen, 13 billion light years away from us. The galaxy is relatively young. It was born like 700 million years after the Big Bang, the scientists figure. Closer to home, did you see this article? All the jackrabbits have disappeared from Yellowstone. They used to be in that area by the millions, so many you couldn't count them. A new study by a New York-based group called the Wildlife Conservation Society says the rabbits are just gone, and it's a major concern for the ecosystem there. They don't know what caused it. Disease or weather or predators, they don't know. But the rabbits are a crucial link in the food chain, or at least they were. And without them, coyotes and wolves have to look for something else to eat. A young elk, a livestock. We've all read about the problems that wolves have caused up in that area, and the ranchers understandably want to shoot them, kill them off. Only three rabbits have been seen in the vast Yellowstone area since the 1990s. Maybe they left because they sensed that dormant volcano up in Yellowstone's about to blow. Some UFO news from the media world. Are you following this shootout on Main Street, this TV showdown between these rival programs that have the same name? There's the UFO hunters on the History Channel, and then there's the UFO hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel. Neither network, I guess, would back down. They both wanted the same name. Then they took it a step further. They scheduled the shows with the same name to air on the same night of the week and in the same time slot on the same night of the week. This can't be good for either of these shows. I haven't seen the ratings, but you got to figure they're splitting the audience to at least some degree. I've only seen one of these programs, one episode of the History Channel UFO Hunters, and thought they did a pretty good job. It's an interesting show. I did hear one negative comment about the Sci-Fi program after its debut. I got a friend, and he's been a guest on this program, Colonel John Alexander. He sent an email after he watched it, and he noted that the Sci-Fi UFO Hunters had breathlessly announced something about a secret document that had been leaked to one of the team members. And this document was a report that John Alexander and his team from NIDS, that's the National Institute for Discovery Science that formerly was based here in Las Vegas, they'd put this thing out together. They'd put it out to the public back in the late 90s. It's hardly a secret document that had to be leaked to anyone. So over the last week or so, there have been a flurry of these emails back and forth about dueling shows. And the producer for the Sci-Fi Channel show put out a memo saying his team is more credible than the History Channel team, that they are hands-on investigators who'd worked with abductees as part of Bud Hopkins' organization in New York. And I went on their site and I looked at their backgrounds, and they do have a lot of field experience, but so do the other guys on the History Channel UFO Hunters. Bill Burns of UFO Magazine is one of them. You know, he's not a behind-the-desk kind of a guy. He's been out in the field, burning up the shoe leather, doing the digging. So I don't want to get too kumbaya on you here, you know, why can't this work out? Why can't they put these shows on a different time so people like us who have an abiding interest in the UFO subject can watch both? I mean, not all of us have TiVo, and I couldn't figure out how to use TiVo even if I had it. Coast to Coast AM is proof enough that there's ongoing public interest in this topic, that people would watch both shows. There's more than enough material to keep both of them going for years, so I hope one of them blinks, or both of them, for their own good and for ours. We're going to talk about UFOs in a minute. We're going to go back to Texas. Stick around after this short break. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM, everyone. I'm your host, George Knapp. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it sort of feels like something's going on regarding UFOs. The Texas sightings have been all over the news, all over the planet, of course, and we'll get into that in detail coming up. There was the Chicago Hare incident, of course, that received worldwide coverage last year. It feels like we've turned a corner regarding how mainstream news media treats the UFO subject. We saw how they treated the news conference in Washington a couple of months ago. It looks like they don't automatically take the military's word for it either. Texas, an example of that. And there's been this flurry of activity. I get a lot of emails from all over the world, friends of mine who are researchers. And in the past week, I've had messages from Hong Kong about UFO activity there. There's a guy named AJ Gavard, who is a real well-known researcher in Brazil. He wrote to several of us from down there about a massive UFO seen in the city of Riolândia, witnessed by a large number of people, supposedly landed, left behind burned vegetation on the ground. That was in mid-January is when it happened. A week later, there was an unusual incident in Mexico where a Japanese airliner was surrounded by these 20 black spherical objects. The same air corridor has had other UFO incidents, of course. Also from Mexico, something called Inexplicada, the Journal of Hispanic Ufology. It reports a UFO landing that was witnessed by an entire town in the state of Guerrero. It emitted flashes for 30 hours, I'm told. I'm told there are photos, of course, but I haven't seen any yet. There's a guy named George Filer who puts out something online called Filer's Files. It's like an accumulation of UFO reports from all over. His most recent mailing list has this list of sightings that he has records of from Arkansas, California, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Washington. And in Australia, Canada, Chile, Italy, Mexico, New Zealand, and the UK. Now, not all these, or maybe not any of these, are ETs or spacecraft or anything. We don't know. But a lot of stuff is being seen in the skies. And then there's this story making the rounds among some of the folks I communicate with. The story is that there was a secret meeting at the United Nations to discuss this flurry of UFO activity and how to proceed. You know, we've all heard these stories about how disclosure could come any day now, and it never seems to happen. That seems to be the gist of what this alleged meeting at the UN United Nations focused on, how to proceed with disclosure. And I haven't confirmed it. I don't even know if I can, but I think we can ask Jim Mars about it later on when he joins us. But again, it just feels like something's going on. And nowhere is this truer than in Texas. This is a story that just won't fade away. As you know, the folks around Stephenville have been seeing this UFO stuff since early January, a gigantic craft that blacked out the sky, other craft that perform all these amazing maneuvers, some that were chased by military jets. The sightings have continued. Witnesses report that they're being hassled and intimidated. The newspaper reporter who first broke the story finds herself without a job, giving rise to a lot of speculation about what happened to her. And the Air Force, which said it had no planes in the area of the sightings, reversed course 2 weeks later, said, "Oops, we had 10 F-16s flying around that first night. Sorry, my bad. You know, guess we just lost track of those fighter planes for a while." For once, at least, the media and the public didn't give the military the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, people are saying, hold on here, this doesn't ring true. So we're going to talk to the former newspaper reporter Angela Joyner in a couple of minutes. First, we're joined now by Alejandro Rojas. He's the director of public education for MUFON, which has been on the ground in Texas since the beginning. Alejandro, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Give me a sense of the big picture. What's new down there in Texas? What's going on? More sightings, video, photos?
Lots more sightings, more of everything. And I think that's one of the things that we've come to with this case is, you know, we do investigation. We research, we look into the reports and try to figure something out. And with this case, you know, a lot of people are asking us to wrap it up and get some information out, but we haven't been able to because we keep getting reports. So we are going to wrap up the original January 8th piece, and, you know, as soon as those guys get something done, I'll let you know because you'll want to have Ken and Steve, our guys on the ground out there, to fill you in. But the main message is that things are happening on a constant basis. You know, some of these great videos that have come out, they've come out in the last couple of weeks. The first, you know, big video that had come out, and I think it was Linda Moulton Howe who posted it first, and I know the UFO Hunters came down, and they're going to feature it as well on their TV show, the History Channel one.
Which one? Yeah.
Right, there's two of them. So, you know, that was January 20th, so that was almost 2 weeks after the sighting, and now we have another one from February 9th that just happened. The UFO Hunters were working with them, too, to get those analyzed by some of our guys, and they'll have Ken and Steve, our guys in Texas, on the ground. But it's ongoing. It's happening right now. You know, maybe if you want to go out there, it might not be a bad place to go visit if you want to do some UFO watching.
Texas is a lovely state anyway. I've seen some of the videos and photos, the still photos, the time-lapse photos. You know, it's a lights, multicolored lights and sort of squiggly lines in the air. It's hard to tell what the heck those are. I mean, I just be honest with you, I can't tell what they are.
Oh, I know. It's very difficult, you know, and some people have speculated that they're making signs and symbols in the air. So we're going to have Bruce McAbee, he's our guy, look at those videos and get some information out. And that'll probably be first, you know, I'm not sure how long it's going to take him, but that's the guy we're going to have look into it.
The fact that the public did not believe the military's explanation this time, or at least a lot of members of the public
Right.
didn't seem to buy it, how much significance do you attach to that?
Huge. I think that's big. You know, usually I think the military can feel that they can come out with a statement and then the case is closed. And usually that's the case. I think we have to, you know, John Hilkovich, you mentioned O'Hare last year, last January. He did a great job. He was one of the, you know, one of these guys that went out there and he didn't take no for an answer. The first official denials, he didn't listen to him. He did some research and he found out after he did some Freedom of Information requests that there was something more to the story. And I think that was a lot of help for this story because here again, the military makes their statement and the AP writer, Angela Brown, she was actually the one we worked with in January. She's the one who broke the story worldwide and she did write a story about the military explanation and it kind of seemed to appease her. However, the rest of the media doesn't seem to take it. They're like, you know, the alleged, they're using that word alleged for the military, alleged jets in the area. So I think that's huge. I think it's real big. In fact, the way I'm looking at it is usually the media, you know, jumps on the silly. There's the silly and there's the reality of the UFOs. A lot of people are so skeptical they don't go into the reality, which is a great story. So they stick to the silly, which is a good story for them, you know, guys with their silly hats on and everything get a lot of press. But now it's moving to the reality. The media is actually starting to cover the possible reality of this phenomenon. I think that's a huge step.
Well, what media are we talking about? Because I know there's UFO media, like UFO hunters, like Coast to Coast AM, that are interested in these topics on an ongoing basis. What is their ongoing interest by other mainstream media still?
Larry King is huge. I mean, Larry King has had now some three shows lately on this subject, and he seems to have what I call the bug. And I was talking to Angela Joyner about the bug actually earlier in the week, just kind of where you get that bug where you're finally like, you know what? There's something really going on with this phenomena, and I can't let it go. And he's definitely not letting it go. He's attacking it. He's going into it. He's you know, not taking the debunkers for their word. He's challenging the debunkers, which is wonderful. So he's a big one. And then the Today Show, I thought that was huge when Al Roker and Matt Lauer covered this
Yeah, but I mean
story.
that was a month ago. What about now? That's what I mean.
Now we're still getting. I mean, I talked to some reporters in Australia last week. All the press that I'm talking to is taking this very seriously, and a lot of it is kind of local, smaller newspapers. But it's definitely a shift where they're taking it seriously instead of just focusing on the silly.
You know, I read, I think it was Open Minds Forum, some criticism of MUFON itself, speculation that maybe you guys don't want the real story to come out, or you're part of the cover-up, or that you're trying to corner the market on information down there. You're telling people what to do and ordering them around. What's your response to that?
Well, we're very decentralized, and that's why we've gotten to be such a big organization, I believe. A lot of them have these central organizations that were bossing people around, and people don't like that. In this case, we're letting, you know, it's Texas. It's those guys running with the case. They're doing the research and they're on the ground. And a lot of people get frustrated with us because we aren't like news sources where they're going to take information and get it out very quickly. But that tends to lead to a lot of speculation. We're going to be very methodical about it. We're going to take it to our experts. We're going to give the experts the time they need to look into the information. And we're going to take our time investigating it so that we're releasing credible and substantiated information. And I think that's why we've been so popular with the media, because they know if they come to us, we're going to give them not only an explanation, but we're going to give them the X, Y, and Z and why we believe that. And here's the experts who tell us that this is what's going on here. So it takes us time, and we get criticism from inside saying, hey, I want daily information on Texas. But these guys have jobs. They work 40 hours a week. You know, they're doing their best to do what they can when they can make some time. They have family. So it takes us a lot of time to be able to gather information and release it in a way that we feel confident and proud of.
All right, Alejandro Rojas of MUFON, stick around. We're going to be joined in a couple of minutes by Angela Joyner, the reporter who started a lot of this stuff off. But I want you to stay with us as well to have the big picture's perspective. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. Our guest coming up in a couple of minutes, Angela Joyner, former newspaper reporter, after she separated from her employer. On Valentine's Day, I think was her last day, she posted this message. She said, "I think my readers would find a lot more of this sort of story interesting, but my newspaper doesn't want any more stories. My boss feels it's time to move on. A city councilman here talked to the Star-Telegram, another newspaper, and said the whole thing was an embarrassment to the town, or something to that effect." Well, whatever the reason is, Angela Joyner does not work for her newspaper anymore. She's moved on. And coming up after this short break, we're going to find out why. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Stick around, everybody. Welcome back, everyone. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. We're joined now by Angela Joyner, formerly of the Stephenville Empire Tribune. Angela, thanks for being here tonight.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Am I just guessing, or you really don't want to talk about this stuff? Are there limits on what you can say about the circumstances surrounding your departure from the paper?
Well, I would rather not be the story. I think the story is the sightings that continue here. It's unfortunate what happened at the newspaper. I don't really want to say anything negative. I'm glad I had the opportunity to write for them. I'm glad I was provided with that opportunity. But maybe it was just time for that relationship to come to an end.
You know, I understand that you would, that's a very professional attitude for you to have, that the reporter doesn't want to be part of the story. Unfortunately, you are part of the story. I mean, you've read the speculation. It's part of a conspiracy. You know, people think the White House called up and had you fired. We got to put a muzzle on this woman. I mean, you are part of it. There's no getting around it, don't you think?
Well, in a sense, I know there's been a lot of speculation. I will say that I just don't feel there was any pressure from anyone above my bosses to discontinue the stories. I think they felt that it was the best thing to do in their news judgment for our area. They felt the local readership had grown tired of the stories and they were ready to move on. It was also a very, it drained a very small newspaper staff. I was the only full-time reporter at the time. Everyone pitched in to help, but the magnitude of the story was such that it was almost impossible to keep up with the phone calls and the emails, and that could have been another reason they were ready to move on.
I understand that. I mean, there's no other hot news story like this one in town going on, though, that deserved your attention more than this, did it? Was it?
I don't feel that there was. They were just ready for me to get back to my, you know, general reporting on school board meetings, different meetings going on around town. No, I thought it was still a big story, and maybe that's where the conflict came in.
Well, the world thinks it's still a big story, too. Tell me this. What do you think it is? First of all, let's start with the military explanation that it was nothing up there and then it was F-16. Do you think that explains it?
Well, actually, I don't feel that the military put out the press release as a way to say, this is what the people in Erath County saw.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, it wasn't worded that way. Major Lewis, when I first spoke with him, he was very congenial and was trying to help me find out about the F-16s. He did call me back and said they could have been from some other base, just not his base. Well, 2 weeks later, that changed, and that press release did say that there were 10 F-16s in between the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. on January the 8th, and that the prior information had been released in error, and that prior information could have only been released to me because I was the only one that was writing about it at the time. So I felt that they put that out simply because later they learned there were 10 F-16s, but the press release never said, this is what we think the people in Erath County saw. It wasn't worded in that way at all.
But it certainly had the effect of throwing some cold water on the story, though, didn't it?
Well, yes, in some cases it did, but not here. The people here felt like, ha-ha, well, the Air Force knows something that we knew all along. We knew there were F-16s here that night.
Hold on just a second, Angela. Alejandro Rojas of MUFON, you want to tune in on that?
Yeah, you know, just from experience on this, I kind of, just like you talked about, they don't necessarily have to say, you know, this is what the folks out there saw to throw the cold water on it like you talked about. And at least with some media sources, and I think with the AP, that they kind of felt that, okay, case closed type of thing, Angela Brown, who originally broke it. But I feel, just because it seems to be something that happens consistently with the military, is that it was an attempt to at least, you know, throw out some sort of explanation.
Hey, Angela, what do you know about these stories we've been seeing over the last week about witnesses being intimidated? These are people that were your neighbors that you interviewed for your original stories. Have you talked to them about this?
Ricky Sorrells feels that he is being harassed, and he has a regular job that he goes to on the weekends. He works very long hours, but part of his income would be his livestock, and he's had military aircraft flying so low that they're disturbing his cattle, disturbing his sleep and his family's sleep. He had an intruder come on his property about 1 o'clock in the morning. He felt that the man definitely wanted to be seen because he has some hunting dogs, some bird dogs, and then another couple of dogs, I think a black lab, and they were all barking, and the guy was just standing there, and he felt, you know, well, this guy wants me to see him, so he never opened the door, and the guy turned and walked back into the woods. Part of Sorrell's land is heavily wooded.
I would think that'd be the kind of thing that in Texas could get you shot in the middle of the night.
He had his rifle, and he was looking, there was a glass in his door, and he was looking through that glass, and he was trying to determine if there was only one person and trying better view, and he said he really almost opened the door, but thought about his sleeping family and thought, you know, maybe that wouldn't be the thing to do. And as he was trying to decide to go out or not, the guy walked off.
Alejandro, has MUFON had any reports of witnesses other than the ones we've already read about, of witnesses being intimidated or problems like that?
We have had some reports that we're looking into, and I know Ken thinks that they're going to find some pretty interesting stuff, that Ken Cherry, the director of MUFON in Texas, that they're going to have some pretty interesting stuff once they put it all together to say about that. But they are looking into allegations of that sort.
Angela, back to you. You know, I sort of been down this road myself. You get into it as a journalist. You get into the UFO topic. It's hard to get out of it. Have you got the bug?
I definitely have the bug. As a matter of fact, last Wednesday night I had a call, and there were some people that thought they were seeing some things, and my brother and I took off, and we got there too late. So, yes, I have the bug. I have been reading a lot. I'm still getting a lot of emails, and my gosh, if I actually get to read everything that has been sent to me, it will take me at least 6 months probably to get through it all, but I plan on doing it.
Well, your reading has just begun if you're going to study this topic, because I'm looking at about I don't know, several hundred books across the room here of mine. Among the reading items, I try to print out everything about Texas just to save it for my files. And I've got a stack of stuff about you and your stories that's as thick as my fist. Among them, though, is something from StephenvilleLights.com. Is that your site?
Yes, sir, it is.
Tell me about it. What will people see on there when they go there?
Well, right now I have one story on from a sighting that has four witnesses. Two of the witnesses are well known. Two more are not. They're new witnesses. I will be posting stories there as I get them. And we hope to add some more things to that site, but actually it's still in the birthing process. It's only about 5 days old, so it's kind of a labor of love right now.
Well, I hope you're ready, because you got about 2 million coast-to-coast listeners that just heard about it and are going to be checking it out, so I hope your system doesn't crash.
Right.
Yeah, you've got some photos on there, some stills and things of that sort that I referred to earlier with speaking with Alejandro. You know, you got these squiggly light trails in the sky. What do you make of those? I mean, I know you're not a photo analyst, but have you asked around? What do people tell you about those things, and what could they be? It's
well,
not an F-16, that's for sure.
There was a film done by a man named David Coran here, and they're very similar to that film. And Leroy Gayton, when he saw that particular film, said, aha, that's what I saw. And he described it as dancing lights in the sky. They're a lot like that. Like you say, I am not a photo analyst. Some people think that they, you know, could have been from a camera that was shaking or that sort of thing. But when I heard Leroy Gayton say that that's it, that's what we saw, then I sort of thought that it was pretty valid.
Well, it's interesting. I think I look forward to hearing Bruce McAbee, who's now working with MUFON to figure out what the heck that is. Tell me this. You know, you've probably been interviewed by all kinds of, or interacted with all kinds of other media, national, international media. What did you think about their attitude? Did you have any folks who just thought it was a laughing matter and kind of a lark, or did most of them seem to take it pretty seriously?
I would say the majority took it seriously. There was just this past Friday, I know there was a Japanese news crew here. Now, I didn't speak to them, but Leroy Gayton did, and they're very serious about it. I did an interview with a Brazilian news crew that was here, I guess, about 3 weeks ago, and they were very interested because they had a report of an object in a sugarcane field, and they were very serious. They want to find out what it is and wanted to see if there were any similarities in what was going on in their country as to what we were seeing here. I've had a lot of people really thank me for reporting it as a straight news story, and that's just how I do things. But I think since then, more media people have taken it a lot more seriously, and the credibility of the witnesses also makes a difference. When you have a pilot and a constable who is an elected official, those sort of people usually are not going to stand up and try to pull the wool over your eyes, so to speak.
I understand what you mean. Tell me this. I'll ask you first, and then Alejandro, you chime in. You know, a couple of weeks ago, there was speculation, and it's purely that speculation, that somehow some of these aerial exercises had something to do with the proximity to the president's ranch in Crawford. Have you pursued that angle, and what do you think of it?
I have looked at that. People feel that when that object came over Steve Allen's head for the second time and those jets were scrambled after it, that that's the reason why it had crossed through the Crawford air space, but I understand the president was out of really out of the country at the time. I don't know if that could have had something to do with it or not.
Alejandro?
Well, you know, I think that it's most likely just coincidental. There's a lot of sensitive airspace throughout the entire country with different bases and different locations. So I kind of feel, you know, with most sightings, there's something fairly close that it could be. I think, you know, with a lot of sightings, we see jets scrambled. So it could be just that, you know, they saw this gigantic mile-wide thing out there, so they scrambled jets. I would think that that's more likely because the president wasn't at the ranch, and we don't have anything indicating that right now.
You two are destroying a perfectly good conspiracy theory.
I know, sorry.
Tell me this.
I'd like to say one more thing, if
sure.
it's okay.
Sure.
The one thing I'm sure of is there are two pilots and crews that saw the same thing that Steve Allen and his friend saw on January the 8th. You know, they were from the Naval Air Station here in Fort Worth, and I'm certain they saw the same thing.
Angela, do you happen to know if there are any photos or video of the really big craft? You know, we've seen some animation of that thing. It was really great. It was online, and it's, you know, like blocked out the sky. Have you seen any evidence that that craft actually existed?
No, I have not seen any photos that look like that. I think I know what you're referring to. Ricky Sorrells does have a cell phone video, but it's not a high-quality cell phone camera. It's fairly pixelated, and it's a little bit difficult to see.
I understood. Alejandro, any indication that that's real? Any other supporting evidence?
Well, you know what? We've got something we're looking into in Florida, some possible video that might be related. It might not. We're looking into that, but regardless, it sounds like, from the information I'm getting, that people are excited about it, and we'll definitely get you that information once we have we look more into that video that we did receive. But they're thinking possibly it was the same thing.
Well, I mean, you know, it's sort of similar to these gigantic triangles that have been seen
right.
all over the country, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, you know, I went out, I tried to make it out into the hills, but it was a little too snowy. But we had a news crew go out for a gentleman who saw. He got a pretty interesting picture, too. You can see it. We're very, you know, you can see all of our reports on MUFON.com. And this guy submitted a picture with some lights in the sky that looked like a large triangle and a smaller one that came up and left like a plasma vapor trail. And in this picture, you can see some sort of strange little trail leading up to these lights in a triangular formation.
Angela, I know you've got the bug and you're reading a lot about UFOs and ETs and things of that sort. This could be a military craft, I guess a top secret military craft, couldn't it?
Yes, there are some people that speculate that it is military. In that last story I did, which people can read online, one of those witnesses is the owner and publisher of the Dublin Citizen newspaper, and he feels it's very, he said it's not like anything he's ever seen, but he feels there's a lot of people that here that just don't realize exactly how many crafts have been tested in the area over the years. That's about all he could say as to why most people don't think the military would have something that huge.
And flying it around in a place where a lot of people could see it. One other quick question, very quickly. Got any job offers in the works?
I've had an offer from a local radio station that I'm thinking about. I have been doing some freelance writing, and
We'll give you a recommendation if we can. Thank you for joining us, Angela Joyner. She's at StephenvilleLights.com, and of course Alejandro from MUFON. Thanks very much. We'll
Thank
be
you.
Back in a moment with Jim Mars on Coast to Coast AM.